U.S. government's dysfunctional, can't regulate anything. Challenge two is the money doesn't want to be regulated. And in the United States, the money gets what the money wants. To look at regulation, really look more to the EU, right? The EU is in some ways the regulatory superpower on the planet, and they're willing to regulate things that the money doesn't want. So that's where you're going to see regulation first. So those are the challenges. The challenge is that we can't do it, even though it would be really a good idea.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Join host Sanjay Puri as he explores the dynamic and developing world of artificial intelligence governance. Each episode features deep dives with global leaders at the forefront of regulating AI responsibly, tackling the challenges using AI can bring about head-on and enabling balance without hindering innovation.
Welcome to the Regulating AI podcast. Artificial intelligence, AI, stands at the forefront of technological evolution, with experts predicting that it could add trillions of dollars to our GDP, but it could also negatively impact our workforce and national security. So how do we regulate it without stifling innovation? Our podcast features insights from various perspectives. We've had industry leaders, government officials, and leaders of advocacy groups. Together, they address pivotal questions that are needed to create practical legislation. I'm very excited to have Bruce Schneier with us today. Bruce is a subject matter expert in cybersecurity, which is one of the very important topics in terms of national security and the interface of artificial intelligence with cybersecurity. And how do we legislate and regulate it moving forward? And that information for our listeners who happen to be, in many cases, members of Congress, their staffers, think tanks, is very important. So that's why we have him on this show. Welcome, Bruce. It's an absolute pleasure to have you on the Regulating AI podcast.
It is nice to be here. Looking forward to a good conversation.
Great. Bruce, let's jump right into it. For our audience, as I said, which comprises a wide and it's a global audience of members of Congress, staff, legislators around the world, industry leaders, can you just provide a brief overview of the intersection between cybersecurity and artificial intelligence?
So the shorter answer is we don't know. I mean, like everything else in the AI space, things are moving incredibly quickly. So where they will intersect is anybody's guess. Right now, there's actually not a lot of intersection. So there are some areas where we're using AI technologies to sift network data looking for attacks and figuring out responses. Those are still pretty nascent, and I expect them to become more productized in the next few years. I'm kind of excited about that. You know, we're already being attacked at computer speeds. Defending at computer speeds will be a huge benefit, but not a lot yet. I mean, this is still pretty new technology, and cybersecurity is pretty specialized. We are seeing really interesting progress in AI finding vulnerabilities in source code. That's something they're not that good at yet, but they'll get better. And that also will be something to watch. Maybe talk about that a little later in this podcast. So that's what we're seeing now. As the years unfold, there's going to be undoubtedly other areas. They're not immediately visible where AI will take over what was a human endeavor and do it either faster or greater scale or greater complexity, greater scope.
That's very helpful. Bruce, just a couple of hours ago, I attended an event where the Deputy National Security Advisor, Ann New Rubenberger, spoke. She was asked really a question about the promise and the perils of AI. And she talked about cybersecurity. She says the promise is that we now have better tools to maybe prevent attacks, but the perils is the people who are attacking us also have the tools to attack us. In your view, has the landscape of cybersecurity evolved with the integration of AI technologies?
Not yet. I mean, and what Anne's talking about, I think about it, is the attack defense balance. And in a sense, she's not telling the whole story. Because I'm sure that the U.S. Cyber Command would love to use AI on the attack side, just as CISA would like to use AI on the defense side. For the U.S., for any country, there are benefits to the attack and the defense. What we want is to be able to use the attack for ourselves, use the defense for ourselves, and have the other guy like not be able to use the attack or the defense. The real question is, like, who does it benefit more? In a generic instance, whether the U.S. is attacking or defending, does it benefit the attack more or the defender more? And we don't know the answer there. In the near term, it'll benefit the defender more because already we're being attacked at computer speeds. And defense at computer speeds will be incredibly powerful. Now, if the U.S. is being attacked, that's good for the U.S. If the U.S. is attacking, that is bad for the U.S. So, you know, right, separate the tech from the politics. But Anne is right that this will change both sides. And what we don't know is who it will change more, faster, and better.
Just to follow that thread, Bruce, recently there was an announcement that came out that there were some massive potential attacks by Chinese hackers on U.S. infrastructure. And the government said AI really helped us detect that. Your thoughts, perspectives towards that, Bruce?
So probably true. And we've heard these articles a lot that other countries, China especially, Russia also has mentioned, is in our infrastructure. You're right. And we could talk about this in a bunch of ways. We know that our private infrastructure, critical infrastructure, is largely in private hands. And the government of Russia against some power company in the middle of Michigan is not a fair fight. So here, attack has an advantage. Now, because China, Russia, other countries don't talk about it, we don't hear about how the U.S. has infiltrated their power grid, but guaranteed we have as well, right? It would be irresponsible of us not to, right, to maintain this balance. So here we're seeing, right, AI helping the defense by looking at patterns of network traffic and identifying attacks and penetrations, right? That will work in our favor when we're defending ourselves. That will work against us when China uses it to find the places we've penetrated them. So I think that is right. I mean, and that is why I think in the near term, these technologies benefit the defense.
These technologies benefit defense. That's a great point. Bruce, just turning a little bit towards regulations, what, in your view, are key challenges in regulating AI applications in the field of cybersecurity as legislators look at that?
Sure. They don't want to be regulated. Okay. So challenge one, U.S. government's dysfunctional, can't regulate anything. Challenge two is the money doesn't want to be regulated. And in the United States, the money gets what the money wants. To look at regulation, really look more to the EU, right? The EU is in some ways the regulatory superpower on the planet, and they're willing to regulate things that the money doesn't want. So that's where you're going to see regulation first. So those are the challenges. The challenge is that we can't do it, even though it would be really a good idea. But remember that a lot of this infrastructure is in private hands. And it really doesn't make sense for us to demand that a private company defend the nation. Right? It's not their job. It's not their remit. Right? It's not in their profit motive. So what do we do? Right? We have several options. We can nationalize the industry. So that doesn't make any sense. We could subsidize the actions, maybe. We could take over the actions. They're not going to like that. So now our only answer that has a chance of flying is giving them a lot of money, right? And there's a lot of pushback against the government spending money. So in the U.S., you've got a serious policy problem in that the solution is not politically tenable. I don't have a good way around that. I'm really looking to the EU for regulations on companies to improve their security, but that's on like social media companies and the big tech monopolies, not on our infrastructure companies, which are more national. So don't have a good answer here. And here's an area where my only hope is that our offense is as good as their offense, so there's some kind of stalemate, because our defense is going to be lousy for a while.
Some of what you're saying is scary, but let me pick up some of the points that you said. As you said, the saying goes that U.S. innovates, China copies, and EU regulates. So you're saying is we should, and EU has just passed that AI Act, and you're saying maybe that's one hope. But also, you said it's not fair for, let's say, a power company in Michigan. How are they going to protect themselves against state actors? and we are don't have regulations. When you look at Cyber Command and others, do you think, is there some kind of role for regulators to come in and say, hey, there, these are basic fundamental infrastructure issues, et cetera, that we need to figure out a way to protect?
That'd be great, but we can't even get regulators to come in and say, your water has to be healthy to drink. Like, we are terrible at regulating these companies. And we are so anti-regulation that we're just unable to do it. So yes, I mean, I think there's a lot of room for that. I think that is the only way to solve the problem. But I just don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, just because of lobbying and money and politics and sort of all the reasons why we can't have nice things. Regulation is really always is looked down on, which makes no sense to me. It is the way we build the substrate on which the market operates. We want no one to be able to sell pajamas that catch on fire. So we pass a regulation. We don't want you to be able to send five-year-olds up chimneys to clean them. We pass a regulation. I mean, these are how we impose our values, our everything that's non-market onto the market. And here is, again, we have a market failure. Market's not going to solve, right, China in the U.S. power grid. It's just not. It can't. Right? Yeah, people don't make buying decisions based on that, and they shouldn't be expected to. You mentioned the EU AI Act. It's a good first start. I mean, at least the EU is trying to regulate AI in the way nobody else is. It's still just the first start. And I do worry about loopholes and the fact that tech is moving so fast, parts will be obsolete like any minute now. And this speaks to another big problem. How do we regulate at the speed of tech? Right? You know, our regulatory process tends to be reactive and slow. And by the time we build a regulation, it's too late. I think we learned from social media that we just ignored regulation for a decade. And now that it's so big and so problematic, it's also so powerful that it's too late. We can't regulate it. Congress holds in the CEOs and yells at them and nothing happens. So how do we not make that mistake with AI? It's going to be hard. There's already a lot of money in AI afraid of stifling innovation. Now, that's an interesting phrase. In our society, we regularly stifle innovation when the results of getting it wrong can kill you. Pharmaceuticals, aircraft design. Now, we take a much more precautionary principle that before you release a new drug onto the market, before you release a new aircraft design onto passengers, you have to pass a lot of safety tests to show that your thing won't kill people. We don't do that with software. We don't do that with software because historically, we didn't have to, and it didn't matter. That whatever you did, whether you were Facebook or a startup or whoever, you couldn't do any damage. Now it's changed. Or think of banking. It's a lot of regulations banks have to follow to make sure they don't drop the market. They're not always effective, but we try. And big banks have more regulations on them than little banks. My guess is that we have to move toward that kind of regulatory regime with software. No one's going to like it. It's going to be fought tooth and nail. But it is important because these are issues that the market can't solve. And recognizing the limits of markets feels really important for a society that uses markets as the primary mechanism for resource allocation. Right, there's this weird myth that markets do everything. They don't. They do some things really well and some things terribly. And these kind of national threats are the things they do terribly. So now what do we do? But this is a conversation that you claim we have Congress people on this Zoom. Like, they're not going to like what I'm saying. I don't care which party they're from. Because we as a country no longer think this way. And that's going to be bad.
So Bruce, several threads and you're making me think a lot about what you said, some great points. When we have members of Congress, Senate, et cetera, that come in, they say there is this dilemma, and we talked about this. Let's not kill innovation because the United States thrives. I mean, we are the fountain of innovation by over-regulating it.
So do we think that innovation is killed in pharmaceuticals? Like, we really regulate the hell out of pharmaceuticals.
But it does take a long time to
get
the drug to
market. Because if you get it wrong, it kills people. We want it to take a long time. That's a good thing, not a bad thing. When AI gets to the point where you get it wrong, it kills people. We will be happy if it takes a long time before a new thing happens, because you get it wrong and people die. Right? That's the difference. And I know we like it when there's no regulation, but it's only fun and games until people start dying. And we're rapidly getting to the point in computers where they're affecting the world. Driverless cars. You get it wrong, people die.
Bruce, just following that point, you just talked about pharmaceuticals. Pharmaceuticals have the FDA. There is FTC, et cetera. Are you suggesting that we should have a regulatory body for, let's say, AI? Because there is that discussion going on Capitol Hill. There's some people propose it, some are against it. I want your perspective on it.
It's probably not a bad idea. If you think about it, we as society have generally created a new regulatory agency when there was a new major technology. Trains, radio, nuclear power. All of those technologies resulted in the formulation of new government agency to figure out like how to make it work within the confines of our country. That was back when we like did big things and had big ideas. We're too timid to do that. But it makes a lot of sense. It is a transformative technology, and we need a place in government to house that expertise, both technically and then from a policy perspective. Right. So radio was the Federal Radio Commission, became the FCC. And like airplanes also, new regulatory agency, right? So you think of these technologies, which were much less transformative. And I'm thinking of AI and robotics together. That's at least transformative as airplanes. Airplanes got their own agency. The Department of Energy, nuclear power, got its own agency. So yes, I don't think we're going to do it. I think we kind of lack the vision in this decade of this century. But it would make a lot of sense.
When I have brought this up on the show with members of Congress, I mean, some of them have said it's really hard in this environment to build something, another bureaucracy.
I admit it. We are unable of governing in this century. They are right. Like we have lost the ability to govern. I agree with them. Doesn't mean it's not the right thing to do, but they're right. Yeah, it's not going to happen. And we'll be harmed because of it.
Bruce, just shifting a little bit from an ethical standpoint, what do you think are the major considerations when deploying AI in cybersecurity?
In cybersecurity, I don't know if there are major ethical considerations. I mean, normally they're about, do the harms fall disproportionately on different classes of people? I mean, that's the sort of standard ethical problem with AI. But AI and cybersecurity doesn't really affect people in the same way that, you know, an algorithm that determines whether you get let out on bail, or an algorithm determines whether you get a job or admitted into college. So I don't know if we have those same issues. So I really can't think of, I mean, there probably are, and I'm missing them. But right now I can't think of ways that we have really ethical problems with AI in the cybersecurity field.
Okay. Shifting to a little bit to national security, Bruce. How receptive do you think would our national security agencies be to regulatory frameworks around AI?
Yeah, national security agencies often get exceptions. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they're going to care, right? They get exceptions to like environmental laws and lots of regulations. So they probably just carve out an exception themselves. So I don't know if it would matter. Of course, they don't want to be regulated any more than anybody else does. So not receptive. No one wants to be regulated. It's no fun.
Yeah, but then what potential risks does the unregulated use of AI in national security pose for us, Bruce?
Depends on the application, right? What are the risks from? Like we all get killed to like minor bad things happen. It all depends on how it's used. And it's very specific to the use. And I worry about generalizations here.
Bruce, you mentioned something which was very relevant, that the technology is moving very fast. You look at AI, large language models, multimodal agents. Now people are talking about AGI, et cetera. Let's just say, even if the EU AI Act or in the US, we come up with some kind of a congressional bill, legislation, et cetera. How does Congress keep up with these kinds of changes? Do you have any suggestions for members of Congress?
It's funny. I hear this question relatively often, and it's odd because I think the answer is obvious. We have lived for decades in a world which is more technological than the average legislator, no matter what country they're in. And whether it is technology or economics or foreign policy or monetary policy or healthcare, right? We have for decades asked legislators to craft policy on topics they don't understand. How do we do it? We give them staff. This isn't new. So that's how you do it. You give them staff. Now, the bad way is we give them lobbyists, right? Lobbyists walk in and say, here, I have the answer. Just do this and here's some money. But the good way is we give them staff of knowledgeable experts who research and help the members form policy opinions. This is going to be no different.
Okay. So what you're saying is, and a quality staff is the answer in terms of keeping up with what's going on with technology.
For every issue the member has to deal with.
Okay, good point. And we do work with the staffers, we do briefings, et cetera.
And I think that's actually more important than members. I mean, the members have a lot going on and they got a fundraise or a re-election. The staffers are the ones who can drill down on issues and understand them and figure out what to do. Like, I mean, I guess I'm assuming that doing something is possible, which is a big assumption. But right, the work is done by the staff, not by the members.
Bruce, is international collaboration possible in terms of AI legislation, in terms of security? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I hope so. I mean, all of these issues are much bigger than nations, right? I mean, even something like Facebook, you know, just the company, there isn't any political body with the right regulatory footprint to regulate Facebook, right? Facebook has more users worldwide than Christianity, right? So we need international regulatory bodies. We don't have them in the way we need them. But thinking about AI and cybersecurity, it's the same thing. The more we can do internationally, I think the better chance we have it of working. But it is really hard.
Yeah, it is. It is. Bruce, President Biden issued a pretty comprehensive executive order on October 30th, which covered a lot of different areas. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Looking to make the most out of AI advancements and innovation? Visit regulatingai.org to learn more about how best to optimize the use and integration of AI and sign up for the Regulating AI newsletter to keep up to date with the latest in AI governance and regulation.
Taught it in my class last fall. And you're right, there's a lot to it. And there's a lot that isn't there because it wasn't a law, it's an executive order. So it's limited by the power the president has through executive order. So a lot of things, it's using the administration's buying power. A lot of it is using the power of the regulatory agencies. And there's no new laws. So that limits what it can do. The most interesting thing I saw, and I'm up to, I don't know if I'm optimistic about it. My feeling is we need a public AI, that we need some counterbalance to corporate AI. That corporate AI is built in a certain framework with a profit motive, which very much limits what it can do and how it's constructed. And that we need a non-corporate AI to coexist in this ecosystem. And it's not there in those words, but there is talk in the executive order about non-corporate AI funding. So my hope is that turns into something of a non-corporate AI model, which I think is really important for the planet. I expect not to get in the US. This is actually something where the EU is probably going to lead here again, but I don't care, right? I mean, anybody on the planet can make this. I don't need it to be American. It has to be non-corporate. And that just makes it different enough that we'll be able to do different things with it. We'll have a different trust relationship to it. And I think it also will make corporate AI more trustworthy because it will be something else in the ecosystem to compare it to.
So a couple of points on that. Some companies like Anthropic, OpenAI have some kind of a public good motive towards that. So that's one issue. Second issue is there are now open source solutions, whether it's Meta's Llama 3, Mistral, and others. And then there is also this national resource center that the National Science Foundation and NIST are working on. Your thoughts on open source, closed source, where do you come out, and what do you think about this National Resource Center? Is that a good thing?
I think it's a good thing. I mean, OpenAI had a benevolent model that kind of, I think, got destroyed in the whole Sam Altman, Microsoft. Oh, is he hired? Is he not? I think now OpenAI is fully corporate and fully really controlled by Microsoft. Anthropic does have a public-facing purpose. We will see if that survives the north side of money that's being flung around here. Yes, I am a fan of Llama. I'm a fan of the French Ma, the Hugging Face. Stuff that is open source. Open source is not the same as public. It is a part of it, but we need more. So I do like the fact that there are public domain models that a hobbyist are using and innovating with and moving in 1,000 different directions. I think it's incredibly innovative right now and important. And again, not corporate. So that's powerful. None of this is enough, but I like all the things that are happening.
This is just a twist on one of the things you mentioned. Can AI itself be used as a tool for monitoring and enforcing compliance with cybersecurity regulations?
I think it'd be used as a tool for anything. I mean, so let's imagine this. Like, give an AI everybody's tax return. Find me the cheats. Give an AI access to all the camera feeds at a slaughterhouse. Find me the violations of code. Like, give an AI access to anything. And it's not doing anything humans can't do. We just don't have enough humans. So yes, I think there's a lot AI can do in compliance enforcement throughout the world. Now, I think there's been a lot of pushback. Already we have people who don't like the IRS. Even though the IRS is like the only profit-making arm of our government, their return on investment is great. But there are people who want it to be easier to earn your taxes and don't like the IRS. I think you get the same corporate pushback against, we're going to automatically look at all of the stock trades, give it to an AI, and it's going to tell us who's doing insider trading. That'd be fantastic, but the money's going to hate it. And all these other, use the AI to find, right, corporate non-compliance in laws and regulations, the money's going to hate. But I think there's incredible value here. And that AI can do a lot to make our society more law-abiding. But the wealthy lawbreakers don't like that.
By the way, the IRS commissioner said that they are using AI and they've been able to recover quite a bit of money because of using AI and finding, as you said, I don't know whatever the term is, finding maybe money that they should have gotten. Maybe that might be a better term to put it. Bruce, this morning when I was at this session, the topic of deep fakes, watermarking, because keep in mind, we are now in an election year, especially in Washington, D.C. What are your thoughts on this? Can watermarking help us?
Not really, because watermarking is a way I can tell you that I am real.
Yeah.
It doesn't help when the sender of the video, called the video, wants to fool you. And it doesn't work in text. So there are mediums where we can't do it. Video and images we can watermark. A lot of the applications, watermarks don't do us any good. So there was it's in the news yesterday. So someone, I think in Hong Kong, was fooled by a deep fake video conference to wire $25 million to a criminal.
Wow.
So there's a piece of fraud. Now, how can a watermark help? Like, maybe there's a watermark that shows this comes from an actual Zoom window and not from a computer-generated window, but I can feed from my computer through Zoom and it gets the watermark. There's just too many ways around it for it to do good there. Let's see the thing with cameras. I can feed an image into the system that watermarks it in a way that it doesn't work. So some places it does, a lot of places it doesn't. And you only can do it in areas where you have a lot of noise, which are things like video and tech. Look at your image, right? There's an enormous amount of white space above your shoulders. that I can hide a watermark in, and no human will see it, but the computer can. So it's easy for video. In text, I don't have that white space, really. Right? I mean, it's changing words. So it affects the actual text. So a lot of limits to watermarks. It's good technology. We're going to use it when we can, but there are a lot of places we can't.
So it's not 100% foolproof for us.
100%, 100%, not 100%. Okay. I don't even know what that means.
Okay. Bruce, any concerns about this is a year not just in the United States. There are many elections being held in democracies. Any concern about how AI could impact democracies, elections around the world?
I think we're seeing them right now. We've seen deepfakes in Slovakia. We've seen some stuff happening in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much it's going to affect things. It's really interesting that, you know, a lot of the what's called cheap fakes that aren't even using AI are just as effective because a lot of this is social signaling. It's not about facts.
Yeah.
But the things that seem to affect are stuff that happens at the last minute where there's no time to verify. So don't know. It is worrisome. Because there are a lot of elections. This is a year when the planet's voting in democracies.
Yeah.
We're going to have to see. I'm hoping that we'll be inured to it, but we don't know. But I did write an essay like November that said, hey, 2024 is going to be a big year. Let's watch this.
Yeah. We'll be watching very carefully. Bruce, final thing, as I said, our audience is made up of people on the Hill, think tanks, etc. Made some excellent points. Any final thoughts that you would like to communicate to them and our listeners?
Something I said earlier, that this is moving incredibly fast. I mean, there's essays I wrote last summer that are no longer true today. Anything we say is true right now. Come back in 6 months, it could be different. And don't take things a long lengths of time. So there we had stories of AIs writing legal briefs and getting precedents wrong. They don't do that anymore. Right? Someone hooked them up to an actual search engine. So they don't get URLs wrong. They don't get math wrong anymore because someone hooked it up to a math lab. So all this stuff is moving so fast. And everything you read is about a snapshot in time. So just be agile and understand that what is true today might not be true next week.
So be agile.
Be this as a podcaster, right? Because you're going to make new episodes.
We need to get you back because there's a lot more that I would have liked to talk about. But Bruce, thank you so much. We went from cyber to national security to elections to democracy. I could have gone so many other ways, but this is fabulous. Thanks so much for taking the time, Bruce. Really
thank you. And we will do this again.
You bet. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the Regulating AI Innovate Responsibly podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on the show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you'll never miss an episode and leave us a 5-star review.